You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
I'm going to beat Dan to the punch. We have a World Cup update spoiler.
Ooh.
3 minutes in. They're only 3 minutes in. And Canada and the Bahamas are tied at zeros.
It's not the Bahamas.
I know.
Well, who's winning?
If it were the Bahamas, wouldn't it be B-A-H?
Well, wouldn't it be B-A-H for Bosnia and Herzegovina?
That kind of, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we got to come up with three letters for this country.
I saw the flag. I'm like, wait, Bahamas? And Scott said, no, it's Bosnia Herzegovina.
Oh, wait, so this really was, Dan actually said Bahamas.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
It seems like the World Cup is more of a geography lesson than it is an actual sporting event for us.
I'll tell you what it wasn't last night, a sellout.
Oh, my, that was bad.
The South Korea and who did they play?
Czech Republic.
Yes.
Czechia.
That's its third iteration of names since the Cold War.
That's right. Czechoslovakia, Czech Republic, mm-hmm. Czechia.
They should inform the news outlets that they prefer going by their new name.
They have.
Everything I said Czech Republic. But anyway, to Scott's point, you could very well, very easily tell what color the seats were in that stadium.
Mm-hmm. Where were they playing?
They were playing in Guadalajara.
Ah, okay. Are they charging the same outrageous prices in Mexico as they are here?
Sam, take the floor on that one.
So I did some research. Forgive me. I know.
Really?
I know. I'm sorry. And the empty sections ranged in price from $500 for the back of the section to $5,000 for the front of the section.
Jeez, this is South Korea and Czechia.
And there were entire...
Is this pesos or American dollars?
American dollars.
American dollars.
There were
5,000 pesos, that's a good deal.
Entire sections that had 15 people in them.
$3.
Yeah.
Well, I'm watching the Canada match in here against the Bahamas, and even I am seeing a handful, not many, empty seats, and that game is being played, I believe, in Toronto.
Yeah.
Or no, it might be in Vancouver.
Yeah, there's a whole section right there of empty seats. Mm-hmm.
I think our own Fan Fest, right there. Only half of the people that registered for yesterday's Fan Fest showed up.
It was like 500 degrees.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And it was a Thursday.
I'm just
afternoon.
Stating facts here.
And the thing is, with the Fan Festival, it's open to the public. All you have to do is get a free
ticket,
and so you can go or not. So you know. It's not like you have to go there because you're not spending any money.
We have a game update.
Oh.
Yeah, they have entered the sixth minute.
Oh. And the score?
Still 0-0, yeah. Oh. Yep. Mm-hmm. Sixth minute.
There seems to be a lot of people in the stands there. This is a lot of Canadian fans, of course.
Well, duh.
Since they're playing in Canada.
As we stated yesterday in the show, all soccer game scores are close. They're all close games.
That is true. I'll give you that. Did I see this? Where is this game? Vancouver or Toronto? I just saw a sign for Toronto. Not that it matters. Who cares, right? Anyway, they're approaching the seventh minute, and it's still 0-0.
Okay, that's
all right. All right, we're done.
We're moving.
Okay, we're good.
Someone's dribbling the ball now.
How was dinner last night?
Wait, I finally made it to a Kansas City institution that I've heard about since I have lived here and never been there once until last night.
He's a good friend of the show.
I went to Jasper's Italian restaurant last night.
Ooh.
And I guess if there's people that just happen to be here in town for the World Cup and happen to be listening to 98.1 KMBZ and you're looking for a place to eat, go eat there. Kansas City institution. The Mozzarella Theater, I think they call it. That was pretty amazing.
Mozzarella Theater?
That's the actual word of it.
That is where JJ Jasper, sorry Jasper, comes to the table and prepares your mozzarella for you.
Which it looks like it's cheese curds basically in a bowl, and then they add boiling water to it, and you watch as he turns it into a ball of fresh mozzarella. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
You had a good time.
It was good, yeah.
Did Jasper stop by the table?
He did. Jasper, Jay, the whole crew stopped by. And nice. Very personal. They did the mozzarella theater themselves. So it was pretty phenomenal. And I learned a lot about our one and only Sam Stevie as well.
How'd you learn about Sam?
Apparently, I don't know if Kansas City knows this, he comes from one of the greatest French chefs of Kansas City. Is somewhere in his lineage.
The great Gus Reedy, my grandfather,
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, opened up La Bonne Auberge, I think was his third restaurant in the city. Yeah.
Is it still there?
No. It was kind of a, have you seen the show The Bear?
Is that? Yes, that show is so good.
It was kind of a situation where he built up these incredible restaurants and then moved on from them.
Well, don't give away the show. The last season's getting ready to start.
Oh, I haven't watched after season 3 in The Bear, to be honest with you.
Yes.
But yes, there are many wonderful stories of my grandfather and his endeavors here. And it's actually, his life is a crazy story. He is Swiss, or was Swiss. He has since passed a couple years ago.
Oh, sorry.
And came to the United States to be a private chef on the East Coast. And at some point decided, I'm going to go back to France and become trained in classical French cuisine. And brought it to Kansas City.
It sounds like he did more than just get trained in it.
Did I miss it? He was French, or he was not French?
No, he's Swiss. Was Swiss,
okay.
Yeah.
Swiss.
Anyway, glad you had a good dinner.
Yeah. Thank you.
First time. I'm kind of...
I know. I don't get out enough, man. I don't get out enough. I get asked all the time, like, hey, have you been to this restaurant? I'm like, nope, never been. You're insulted. What?
I said, I'm insulted on behalf of Jasper that was your first time.
Oh, yeah. I live pretty far south, though.
Do we leave the UFOs alone today or not?
Yes, please.
Okay. here's what
coming from a guy who's seen them.
So, yeah, like, apparently logic doesn't matter in any of this discussion.
It does. Apparently, a lot of stuff has been released because there's other stuff that it's a Friday and they don't want people talking about, maybe.
So SpaceX went public today.
Yes. I think 135 a share is what I read.
That is correct. A number of financial experts say that 135 is overpriced.
Well, okay. So if you like this, I'm just talking historical context here now. Just stating facts. Historically speaking, and this is not to say anything about SpaceX or any other IPO, because this is going to be a big year of IPOs, I think. Historically, IPOs underperformed for the first 6 months, roughly. Almost every IPO. I mean, the companies that you know and love today, when they IPO'd, they usually the first 6 months struggle, go down in price before they sort of catch up. So, yeah, that's just historical.
And we'll get more into the morality of being worth $1 trillion in a minute. I heard some fascinating things earlier today. Well, I find it immoral.
Oh, we're going to disagree on this one. This will be good.
And that's fine. I think it is immoral to be that rich while so many other people struggle. And I'm not a socialist, and I'm not saying that he needs to, I am going to say some things, but let me just say this real quick. I was watching, I think it was a Today Show this morning. To put it in perspective, $1 trillion, okay? If you had 1 trillion pennies, okay, and you just stacked a penny on top of another penny, and you had 1 trillion of them, that line of pennies would go to the moon and back and to the moon and back.
Okay.
That's a lot of money.
That doesn't speak to morality to me, though.
He could spend $1 million a day for the next 3,200 years.
Okay.
So an IPO is typically done for a new company so that they can
raise money
and invest in their own company. So is this for a new company?
No. It's usually to take the growth to the next level.
Well, and this isn't the first time that a well-established, massive company has become an IPO.
No.
And typically, Jesse, unless I'm mistaken, when it is a massive company like this that opens up the IPO, they actually explode at the beginning, and then it falls off very quickly because all of the investors are trying to get whatever initial dollars they can off of artificially inflating the price by buying it all up and then selling it all off 24, 48 hours
later.
Markets
in the short term are always emotional. Like, they're volatile. There's a lot of FOMO that comes with these sorts of things where people want to get in on it. But historically speaking, again, if you just look at the numbers, if you go through all the history, if you run it through Google or ChatGPT, you'll find out the history of most IPOs in the first half year is usually less than stellar.
Let me ask you guys if you think this is true. I was listening to a financial podcaster earlier, and he seemed very bright. His name escapes me at the moment. But he said, with this IPO, for example, and he had put in overnight, there's one of these services, Robinhood, Is that one?
Yeah. That's kind of a self-trading platform. Do it yourself.
So he went to Robinhood overnight and he put in for 150 shares of SpaceX, valued at $135. And he said when he woke up this morning, he was informed that there was such high demand on the SpaceX stock that he only was given one share.
Yeah, there's only so many in an IPO, initial public offering. There's only so many shares of stock. There's not unlimited shares of stock to go around.
And I know that there's only one person in here who knows more about finances than the three of us combined, and and he's right there. But this podcaster also said, don't think of this as people buying into SpaceX stock. They're buying Elon Musk trading cards. It's like a Pokemon card, he said. It's only worth the value that people are willing to pay for it. And what people are doing is because the thinking goes, if you bet against Elon Musk, you will lose.
Well, okay, I'm going to disagree a little bit more on this. When it comes to a stock offering and any stock price, stocks are traditionally based on earnings, future earnings. That's what the market sentiment is. And, you know, in the case of an initial public offering, there is a valuation that goes into that. There's an actual tangible number that lots of very smart people, underwriters for these investment banks, came up with that initial purchase price number. There's a reason and a logic behind it. It's not just an arbitrary, hey, this is what Elon Musk's trading card is worth today. Mm-hmm. Because that's speculation. There's a lot of things that you can invest in out there that are speculation. But
the playing card analogy, do you think that's fair, accurate? That the people just want to get in on the game.
Emotional investors, yeah. This goes back to my earlier comment about FOMO, how markets in short term are very volatile, and there's a lot of, nobody knows what's going to happen in the short term.
And it's not like he's getting duffel bags full of cash worth $1 trillion.
That's a fair point, Sam. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
Sorry. I want to talk about that idea of being worth $1 trillion.
Yeah, it's not sitting in his bank account, folks.
Because if he were to go and sell every asset he had today, he would not even get close to $1 trillion because the act of selling it in and of itself would lower the value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of his net worth is tied up in assets, in companies. It's not like he can go to the ATM and pull out. He doesn't have $1 billion or $1 trillion to pull from. The other argument to counterpoint to the morality of being a trillionaire is like when you look at every billionaire, and now we have a trillionaire, but every billionaire in the world has made other people's lives better through providing employment for them, a product that makes our lives easier. Look again, we talked about these little rectangles we all carry around. When Apple introduced the iPhone, this is now accessible to even the people living, in abject poverty, have iPhones.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Now, I understand texters and appreciate it, and Jesse's right and Sam's right. Elon Musk is a trillionaire today. That's what the headlines are all going to say tomorrow morning. And I know that he can't go to the ATM or to his bank and say, I need $1 trillion. First of all, they don't have it.
Yeah.
Not anywhere close. I don't even know where they would get it. I understand it's a worth. He is worth $1 trillion. He doesn't have $1 trillion. But when I talk about, morality and not that I'm the most moral person on the planet, I am a flawed human being, and you'll hear more about that later today. Heavily flawed. But there is no way in a million years that he could even possibly spend that money, even if when he dies, he leaves it for his, I think, 11 kids, 9 kids. I don't know how many.
I think he's up to 12 now.
Oh, he's got a lot. He's
It's hard to tell because they all have such weird names.
Yeah.
He's like the Tyreek Hill of...
Wow. Wow.
He averages 3.5 kids per company.
Okay. Scott, you were saying.
Anyway, moving on. What I'm saying is his grandkids or even great-great-great-grandkids will never, ever have to get a job if they don't want to. Will never, ever wonder where their next meal is coming from. And I'm talking generations from now that don't even remember his name.
Assuming he passes it down.
True. But what? Look at for example, Melinda Gates. I have so much respect for that woman, Bill Gates' ex-wife. She is constantly engaged in philanthropy, giving away all that. Why are you shaking your head at me?
Because that is the biggest lie that we have been fed, at least for my entire life.
The Gates or philanthropy in general of billionaires?
Yes, all the above.
Okay.
And I was actually about to bring up Bill Gates because I remember when Bill Gates hit $100 million. And that was huge. It was huge that there was one individual that was worth $100 million. And we were actually championing him, saying, good job, Bill. Oh, my gosh, you built this massive company. You are an incredible individual. You are people that our kids should look up to. I was in grade school at the time. And I also remember them saying, yes, he donates all of his money to charity. 95% of his income he donates to charity. Well, when you look into it, the charity he's donating to is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
But she doesn't.
Who are the sole money controllers within the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation?
Melinda Gates, if I remember correctly, does not donate to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
I hope that's true. I
get your point.
Finally donating to other people. I find it interesting. And yes, I understand that politics plays into this a lot. I can't ignore that aspect of it. But I find it funny that people are looking now, because I've seen the headlines too, and saying, oh, Elon Musk worth $1 trillion. Nobody should ever have that amount of money. But when Bill Gates hit $100 million, we were like, yeah, go Bill!
You need to take the personality out of it for a second. I know that's hard to do in this, but, mm-hmm. but for the claim that having that much money is immoral, you know, take a look at the last time that Elon Musk had a company that had an IPO. What was it? Tesla, right?
I think so.
You know, that made him, you know, super rich, even by the standards of that time. But people like Elon, he's not living in the lap of luxury like people think is. He takes that money and he reinvests it into his next endeavor to try and, you know, whether he's a good dude or not, or a role model or not, he's taking that money. He's bettering society by creating new products, new companies. He's employing people. A lot of other people just got rich today that are SpaceX employees that have been there from day one.
Sure.
A lot of people.
I'm not discounting the fact that he creates jobs. He gives people income, a good living, I presume. And somebody said, I yet to hear an argument about morality, Scott. What my argument is there are so many good charities that do good work around the world. People are suffering.
Yeah,
maybe not in your neighborhood, but there are people who are suffering. If you read about I don't want to get all religious, but read about what Jesus says about wealthy people in the Bible.
Now that idea I can get behind.
Okay, so
we could solve world hunger if a certain number of very rich people would put that money into whatever would solve world hunger.
That's my point.
Even then, that logically is flawed.
Just to be clear, that the point of Jesus in that quote wasn't to say that rich people are evil. He's trying to say that when your focus becomes wealth and not doing good, then now we start getting into morality and spirituality and salvation.
You don't think for a lot of these rich people, and I'm not going to name them because it's just going to piss people off on the text line, but you know who I'm talking about, whose only desire in life is to make money. It is
that's
harder.
Not good.
I hate quoting the Bible on the air. It's not cool radio. It is harder for a rich man to enter the gates of heaven than a camel to walk through the eye of a needle.
Yeah.
That's what Jesus said. I didn't say it. And that's what I'm talking about. That there are people, and I don't know what Elon Musk's motives are, but there are other people who are very famous who make no ifs, buts, or ands about it. They want to make money and they don't care.
Yeah, and that's something they'll have to deal with at some point in their eternity.
but it appeals to me, and maybe it's because he is so successful, that money is such a motivational driver, no pun intended on driver, for him.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
Okay.
If you look at his lifestyle, he's not the guy that's flaunting his wealth. He is. I think he's very driven to create innovative technology, innovative ideas. I mean, I think his next thing is he wants to somehow get us to Mars.
that's not, to me, that's not a, hey, I want to live in the lap of luxury. I mean, if you read all these stories and books about Elon Musk, you know, he's kind of famously known for sleeping on the couch of his office in his Tesla headquarters back in the day and not even having a place to live.
Well, known for sleeping on the couch of my home.
Even though he was a multimillionaire, billionaire at the time as well. Their drive is just different.
Okay.
Yeah. And they take a lot of risk, too. They take risks that you and I would never do.
They also have the wherewithal and the means to do that.
Once upon a time, they didn't.
913-586-7798. If you want to be part of the show, 913-586-7798. Commander Jesse Reed, Sam Stevie III. I'm Scott. If you miss a segment, be sure to check out the Dana and Parks podcast. You can follow us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. We have Festivus Friday, the airing of the grievances coming your way right after the 5 o'clock news. The text line is not pleased. Apparently, I need to go take a Bible study class. Sam, they don't like you right now either.
I apparently, it's very offensive to tell people what happens when billionaires donate to charities that they own.
Okay.
I don't know why that's offensive, but apparently it is.
From the New York Post, as the housing rebellion against data center development gains steam nationwide, the AI technology they power may hold the solution to another problem plaguing the market, and that's red tape. Regulatory costs add $131,000 for a typical home, a significant portion of the average house price of roughly $500,000. Those costs have jumped almost 40% in 5 years and now account for 26% of the average sales price of a home. Those regulatory burdens are one of the primary drivers of the nation's housing shortage, now estimated at more than 4 million homes, according to Realtor.com. Well, how is AI going to turn around the regulations? Okay.
Huh.
Would you want to live near an AI data center?
Not really.
Why?
Because they're loud, from what I hear, they take up a lot of real estate.
They do that. They also drink a lot of water.
Yes.
To cool them down.
Yes. Yeah, well, they take a lot of water.
Well, and back to Elon Musk for 10 seconds.
Heck.
One of the things that they were talking about on the news today was that he also runs Starlink, which launches satellites mm-hmm. into space, and this idea of AI centers in space, would that just be because space is cold and it would automatically keep it cool without the use of all that water?
It's a good question. It could make it just like satellites enhance, our ability to communicate through line of sight. You know, when you got things floating up in the sky versus this radio station, you get over the curvature of the earth, you get too far away from town here, you can't hear 98.1 anymore. Well, when it's up in the sky, you have a direct signal typically.
Hence SiriusXM.
Mm-hmm.
They are actually working on models right now for both floating ocean data centers and space data centers.
But I thought you told me the other day that you couldn't use salt water because it would corrode the...
You can't use salt water in the system.
But you could use, put it in the Arctic or something.
They're talking about putting it in the ocean just as a, so that we're not taking up land.
Oh.
They also, in theory, could put hydropower on them so that you're not then taking up electricity. And I'm assuming those would be built with the new closed loop system, which currently only about 14-16% of all data centers are closed loop cooling systems. The rest are open loop.
I've heard some other interesting arguments about holding off on these massive data centers because who knows, 10 years from now, the technology it may take to run a quote unquote data center may have the size of that significantly smaller. Just like with computers, microchips, everything, the technology gets better and more efficient at an exponential rate. You could argue 10 years from now, a data center won't take up 100 acres of space.
Data centers are kind of the new Walmart. Even though you don't admit you go.
Is there a greeter?
You go to Walmart. You just don't want Walmart in your neighborhood. You want to use AI data centers. You just don't want an AI data center in your neighborhood
mm-hmm.
or anywhere near your house, DeSoto. But
yeah.
where is the end?
Same with an airport. You don't want to live near one.
But yet you want to use it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't build houses up near KCI. Am I wrong? You fly into it all the time.
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's Parkville is kind of pretty close. There's a lot of areas of Parkville that are right under the approach corridor.
Hmm. Now, granted, you have Wheeler Airport, and of course, there's 10,000
not a lot of airplanes going in and out of there anymore.
Right. But I just, where is the end in sight? We had a story, Sam, I think earlier this week, that there are already 9 either already built or planned data centers in the Kansas City metropolitan area.
There are already 30 data centers in the Kansas City metropolitan area. There are 9 proposals.
So it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I remember not too long ago, Rob Breton and I were doing this World Cup podcast, Beyond the Pitch KC. And we had the mayor come in. And, you know, he's talking about, I think it was Mayor Quentin Lucas. If I'm misspeaking, please forgive me if it was somebody else. But the topic came up, what happens to the Truman Sports Complex once the Chiefs move to KCK and the Royals presumably move to the downtown area? And there were 2 ideas floated. One would be there would be no need for Kauffman Stadium, obviously. Mm-hmm. We only have 1 Major League Baseball team. Can't really do anything with a Major League Baseball team or stadium. And so Kauffman Stadium would come down. Arrowhead would stay up. And it would be used for massive events. You know, like if the U.S. women's soccer team came to town, you know, they draw a big crowd. You could have it out at Arrowhead where you'll sell more tickets than if they're out at Sporting. Or big concerts like Taylor Swift or Bruce Springsteen or the Rolling Stones, because they're going back out on tour, believe it or not. I'm not kidding. And then I said, huh, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that. And then this person said, or we can just tear all of it down and make it a data center.
Okay. I've heard an interesting take on what to do with Kauffman someday. Hmm. We get an expansion. This is not my idea, by the way. An expansion of one of those like Savannah Banana baseball teams, because people turn out for that stuff. Very entertaining.
Well, Savannah Banana sold 2 nights out.
Yeah.
See, I think that we should make them giant paintball arenas, you know?
Oh.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Are you being serious?
Yeah, totally.
You're being serious?
Yeah.
Is there
turn
that?
It into a giant haunted house in the fall.
Ooh, love that. No. Make it a pop-up bar? I don't know.
Is there a market for paintball that I missed?
No, there isn't. It's a horrible idea. I just like
it had its day. It came and went.
Yeah, stadium story. Jesse, you bring up an interesting point, though, regarding the advancement of technology and computing power.
Mm-hmm.
We're currently sitting on 30 data centers.
Mm-hmm.
I would be willing to bet that anywhere from 17 to 25 of those are already outdated technology.
Oh, yeah. By the time it actually gets built and is in operation, it's already outdated.
So we build 9 more. We're at 39.
Mm-hmm.
And in 20 years, they're effectively useless.
Yep.
Because the computing power will be so aggressive that to try to run a query through those old servers would override it to the point that it would become, mm-hmm. again, useless. So what is the push? Do we have the need for the computing power right now? Or is this companies trying to just make a lot of money?
We have the need for it because everyone's using AI for everything now. It's become, I mean, I'm going to raise my hand here and call myself guilty. ChatGPT has become, and I'm not promoting that over any other AI service or whatever. It's just the one I have, has become my new search engine. If I want, I don't Google things anymore. I ChatGPT it. Now, I've also seen there's a lot of problems. I'll sometimes ask AI questions I already know the answer to see how accurate it is. And it does mess it up quite a bit. And I don't know if that's because there's not enough data centers to kind of process all this and feed into all the other information sources that are out there to try and give you an accurate answer when you ask it something. But
so once it becomes outdated, what do you do with it then? You just tear it down and build a new one?
Uh-huh. Precisely. Well, in theory, they can take the rare earth minerals that are used in all of the current chips, the super chips, and melt those down and put them into the new technology, whatever that is, assuming it uses the same rare earth materials. So it can be recycled in a way, but I just find it interesting that there's this massive push right now. And to repeat myself, in 10, 15, 20 years, are we going to be tearing them all? Is this just going to be a constant cycle of trying to keep up with the Joneses, the technology Joneses?
Well, in fairness, and I've believed this for a long time, Americans versus Europeans and what they build. Europeans build things to stand forever. Now, they don't always. Americans build things on a 50-year time life.
Hmm.
Name one stadium other than maybe Wrigley Field and Fenway in Major League Baseball, maybe Busch Stadium. I'd have to look that up in St. Louis. Name one that's younger or older than 50 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, Busch has been redone, so.
True.
Fenway looks like it. That was the day it was built.
But again, that's not.
It really does.
That's not because the structure is not good enough. The structure is fine. Arrowhead is fine. Kauffman, despite the reports of whatever they called it, the concrete cancer, is fine.
I agree.
There are not massive chunks of concrete falling from below the stands of Arrowhead.
It's still a beautiful stadium.
The tearing it down after 50 years thing is because, well, they got a new bike. Now I want a new bike. That's what it is.
Well, but you could also look at it this way. All these other football stadiums are incorporating new money-making technology, and I want to get some of that.
Yeah.
And by technology, I don't mean technology in the typical sense of the word. They've got all these fancy, shiny things that are new that we didn't have back in the 1960s and 70s when they built Arrowhead. And now, you know, fast forward to 2026, and you look at SoFi or Allegiant, and these are beautiful, I mean, just gorgeous, shiny, new objects that incorporate tons of things that didn't exist or couldn't be built back in the 60s and 70s.
The text line has a good point here, and I was kind of thinking about this a second ago. You know, if you have the property where the data center is and the technology does get better, you just shove more of the technology in the same square footage and maybe right. get more computing power out of it.
Just pull the shut it down for a while, pull yeah. all those chips
it's
out
like
of it.
It's like if you would have had a room and you put a yeah. bunch of Commodore 365s or something from the 80s in there, now you'd put...
Okay, so I represent the common man on this conversation.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
Professors, if you were to shut down an AI data center, what happens to all the data while you rebuild it or restructure it, whatever? What happens to the data that's in the data center while you have it shut down?
That's one of the biggest controversies surrounding cloud-based computing. So the idea being none of us have files stored on our home computers anymore. And I'm going to pull an arbitrary percentage, but I don't really know the real number. Let's just say 85 to 90% of all of the data centers are just for cloud computing. So Google Drive, Dropbox, Apple has its own cloud system, Samsung, Google has its own cloud system. That is just all of your personal data being stored on a server that is outside of your home. So that is a strong majority of the data centers. Most of them aren't AI. Hmm. The AI data centers are the quicker technology that pulls through the information that is in the other data centers. So, for example, say you took one of the 30 that are currently running in Kansas City and you shut them down, all that would impact is the storage at that particular data center. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, but fine. From the text line, Scott thinks Arrowhead is a dump. He is crazy. It is beautiful. I want to go on the record. I don't know if you were listening with half an ear or maybe you were talking to your friend on the phone. I never said that Arrowhead was a dump. When Sam said Kauffman is fine, I said, yep. And he said Arrowhead is fine. And I said, yep. My argument was that Arrowhead was built 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. And in those 50 years, all these other teams are getting these big, beautiful. If you've ever seen Allegiant Allegiant is the name of the one in Las Vegas, or the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta.
Or is that Atlanta?
And of okay. course, you know, you have Jerry Jones World in Dallas and SoFi in LA. These are all of them relatively new stadiums, and they have amenities that Arrowhead does not have because those amenities weren't either thought of or available 50 years ago. I think Arrowhead is fantastic.
It's going to make a great data center and an even better Spirit Halloween.
Yeah, I was going to say, the text line said, it'll just turn into a Spirit Halloween. That's great.
913-586-7798, 586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Go ahead, Sam. Read the text. and your very unhinged response to it as well, please.
Oh, yeah, sure. I was like, wait, what text are you talking about? From the text line, 9444, go to a new stadium and then come back to Arrowhead or the K. The concourses and the fan experiences here suck. When did we stop going to sporting events for the sporting event? I go to Chiefs games, and I know, bear with me, it's ridiculous. I probably should change my MO here, but I go to Chiefs games to watch football.
What? Don't say that.
I know.
That is so rude.
It's hard to believe. It's hard to swallow. I get it. But when I go to baseball games, I want to watch baseball. So, yes, if our concourses aren't as nice as some... the fan experience is not as special as it is at the other newer stadiums.
Now, wait a minute. Define, because every time, I don't care if it's here in Kansas City or if it's in some other city where they're proposing a new stadium, the owners and the mayor will always say, this is going to enhance the fan experience. Define fan experience.
Yeah, that's
spending
a good point.
More money on a beer, spending more money on a dog.
Right.
Hanging out in the jungle gym in left field.
And then Jesse had a great point when we were talking off the air. Kansas City has its fan experiences built in. And let me correct myself. Had. Because the second the new stadiums come in, I guarantee you that trend is dying.
But tailgating?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely right. But other than the tailgating, which is without a doubt a fan experience and one that you don't get in a lot of other cities, what is fan experience? I don't understand what that term means.
Apparently, it's what they offer in the concourse, which
becomes more expensive when you build a new stadium and have to pay for it.
Well, and to me, as long as there's a guy with a cooler in his hand that's willing to take my cash, good job. You just fulfilled my fan experience requirements.
Here are my two fan experiences out at Kauffman Stadium, for example. I love what you just said. Be here. You know, the old school walking down the aisle and they take your money and you have to pass the beer down through like five other people and then pass the money over. And even though it can get a little annoying, especially if you're sitting next to somebody who likes to drink, it's still.
Dude, it's another still, one?
Man, isn't that 15, bro?
I just watched Naked Gun with my kids the other day and that scene where Elizabeth's in the crowd and she's like in the middle of guys passing chili dogs and like beers over.
Well, there used to be this young guy out at Kauffman. By the way, the other fan experience is watching my team win. That is the real experience I want, is to go out there and watch a very talented team win a game, right? Playing a sport at a level I would never be able to imagine playing it at. There used to be a young man, this would have been probably 20 years ago, out at Kauffman Stadium. I don't know if you guys ever heard it. He only sold lemonade. And he had this very distinct, he would be walking down the aisles and you knew he was coming. I don't even like lemonade, but I bought off of him because he was so entertaining. And he would come walking down the aisle, lemonade. and it was like, oh, he's coming. Here we go. Lemonade.
And you were more likely to pull your wallet out of your pocket because of that experience.
Because he was trying harder.
They were piping in the smell of fresh lemonade, too, probably. Like they do at the movies.
And the cotton candy that just goes straight to your ass.
Also from the text line, fan experience also includes ingress and egress, and leaving and entering Arrowhead Stadium is one of the worst things possible. You clearly have not been to another stadium. Because ours is so easy.
Dan, I think we have a scoring update just now.
Yeah, it just happened.
Oh, no. Or did it?
Nope.
I mean, it did a while ago.
Wow, you guys really suck at watching soccer.
Well, I'm trying to host a talk show, and the Bahamas are not my favorite team.
The Bahamas?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a good thing they're not playing.
How do you get good at soccer when you live in paradise? Just be sitting on the beach.
Ask
all
the team from Curacao.
Well, the people that live in paradise, you know, are just regular people and
that
don't
is
have
true.
Much to do. So
that is true.
Fair
they
point.
Play soccer.
And to them,
on the
it's
beach.
Not paradise because it's just normal.
Can you believe? And that's probably true.
Well, I've talked about how I spent so much time in California over the summer growing up. And my boss used to say to me, because, you know, we'd get 2-3 weeks in and I'd stop going to the beach every day. Because I'm like, it's kind of an inconvenience, actually. I'm getting sand everywhere. This is ridiculous.
Oh.
And he'd tell me, like, hey, man, in a couple of years, you're going to look back and you're going to regret not going to the beach today.
And
I looking back, I regret not going to the beach.
That was
every day.
I was 22 years old, just graduated college, was getting ready to start flight schools and the aviation pre-flight indoctrination, living in Pensacola on the beach with four of my buddies in a high-rise condo. And I couldn't wait to get to Oklahoma to start the next phase of my training. And I look back on it now, I'm like, what an idiot. I was sitting on the beach every night after swimming laps in the pool in my condo and then air drying on the beach watching thunderstorms.
Can't wait to get to that Oklahoma paradise.
Commander Jesse Reed is in for Dana Wright. She's back on Monday. Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. The news is next.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.